You're listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print-impaired. Materials or items read on Ayers LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Hello, I'm Michael Fieldrush. Welcome to another recording of articles from Popular Science magazine, a presentation of Ayers LA. This week's articles include, at 1 minute, NASA squeezes more life from 47-year-old Voyager probes. At 5 minutes, 42 seconds, surgeons implant teeth in patients' eyes to restore vision. And finally, at 10 minutes, new 22-foot-long titanosaur discovered in Argentina. Let's get to it. This first article is from the Science, Space, NASA section and is entitled, NASA Squeezes More Life from 47-Year-Old Voyager Probes, written by Andrew Paul, published March 5, 2025. Both spacecraft are running on two-thirds of their original power. This article begins with a photo. Its caption reads, this artist concept depicts NASA Voyager 1 spacecraft entering interstellar space. Interstellar space is dominated by the plasma or ionized gas that was ejected by the death of nearby giant stars millions of years ago. Voyager 1 and 2 continue to make history every day as they transmit data back to Earth while traveling further into deep space. But there will come a time when amassing distance is all they're capable of accomplishing. At some point, the batteries aboard each 47-year-old spacecraft will finally die, rendering the scientific probes into interstellar monuments to themselves. However, NASA isn't ready to say goodbye just yet and is taking measures to get as much life out of the pair as possible. On March 5th, Voyager mission engineers at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Southern California confirmed they have already turned off Voyager 1's cosmic ray subsystem experiment. NASA plans to do the same for Voyager 2's low-energy charged particle instrument on March 24. Voyager project manager Suzanne Dodd explained cutting each program is a matter of life or death for both machines. Quote, electrical power is running low, unquote, Dodd said in a statement. Quote, if we don't turn off an instrument on each Voyager now, they would probably have only a few more months of power before we would need to declare end of mission, unquote. Launched in 1977, both Voyagers include an identical array of 10 instruments designed to gather a host of unprecedented cosmic information. Each probe is powered by 3 radioisotope thermoelectric generators, RTGs, fueled by decaying plutonium-238. The RTG arrays offered Voyager 1 and 2 about 470 watts at 30 volts when they first launched. Given the plutonium's 87.74-year half-life, they now operate on about two-thirds their original power. NASA has since turned off the majority of each spacecraft's tools, some after completing the planetary flybys during the 1980s and others as recently as October 2024. Voyager 1's recent deactivation, for example, ended its decades-long studies of cosmic radiation. For years, the Cosmic Ray Subsystem's 3-telescope array observed fluctuations from protons and other deep space energies and was integral in determining when and where Voyager 1 exited the heliosphere. Voyager 2's impending power-saving solution concerns its low-energy charged particle instrument that was designed to measure ions, electrons, and other cosmic forces. Both the cosmic ray subsystem and low-energy charged particle instrument rely on a 360-degree rotational platform powered by a 15.7-watt pulse motor every 192 seconds. Although the motor was originally tested to 500,000 steps, enough to make sure it lasted until Voyager 2 reached Saturn in August 1980, the motor will have since completed over 8.5 million steps at the time of its shutoff on March 24. Despite recent technical difficulties and diminishing energy reserves, Voyager 1 and 2 aren't down for the count just yet. Mission engineers plan to continue overseeing Voyager 1's own low-energy-charged particle instrument, as well as its magnetometer and plasma wave subsystem. Voyager 2's magnetic field and plasma wave equipment will also continue operating for the foreseeable future, while its cosmic ray subsystem will be retired in 2026. If all goes according to plan, both spacecraft will continue sending back data from at least one instrument until sometime in the 2030s. Quote, "The Voyagers have been deep space rock stars since launch, and we want to keep it that way as long as possible," unquote, Dodd said. This next article is from the Science Biology section and is entitled, "Surgeons Implant Teeth in Patients' Eyes to Restore Vision," written by Andrew Paul, published March 4, 2025. The rare tooth-in-eye surgery was performed in Canada for the first time. This article begins with a photo of doctors performing eye surgery in an operating room. Its caption reads, "A procedure similar to the one depicted above uses a patient's tooth as part of the ocular implant." A trio of Canadians are on track to become the country's first residents to have their eyesight restored, thanks in part to their teeth. Osteo-odonto-keratoprosthesis, more commonly known as tooth-in-eye surgery, involves harvesting the body's strongest natural substance to craft a specialized lens implant for patients with severe corneal blindness from conjunctival scarring. Tooth-in-eye surgery remains a comparatively rare procedure even 60 years after its development, but advocates hope the newest success stories can help popularize the treatment option for some of the most difficult cases of blindness. Pioneered by Italian ophthalmologist Benedetto Strampelli in the early 1960s, tooth-in-eye surgery is intended to minimize the risk of a patient's body rejecting a foreign implant by mostly relying on its own biological material. Surgeons first extract a tooth, usually a canine, then shave it down to form a rectangular layer called a longitudinal lamina that includes a hole drilled in its center. Once the frame is finished, doctors install a tiny plastic telescope lens into the dentine case before temporarily sewing the implant into the side of a patient's cheek, where it remains for a few months after new tissue grows around it. Another surgery removes the scar tissue from the patient's eye and replaces it with healthy tissue also harvested from a cheek. In a final procedure, doctors sew the implant into the eye socket under the cheek tissue transplant, where the lens helps partially restore sight. Previous surveys indicate many patients' vision improves enough to allow them to drive cars. Tooth-in-eye surgery is only applicable for specific instances of severe corneal blindness, when trauma only damages the front surface of an eye and not its retina and optic nerves. This was the case for Brent Chapman, one of the three surgical patients profiled by the CBC program As It Happens last week. Chapman, a massage therapist from North Vancouver, lost his vision at age 13 after over-the-counter pain medication triggered a rare autoimmune reaction called Stevens-Johnson syndrome that resulted in a weeks-long coma and severe burns across his body and eyes. Chapman, now 33, has since undergone roughly 50 surgeries, including 10 corneal implants, but none managed to permanently restore his vision. There is an additional photo. Its caption reads, "A patient's eye after the tooth has been surgically implanted over the eyeball in tooth-in-eye surgery." Due to the potential risks involved in tooth-in-eye surgery, physicians are only attempting the procedure on one of each patient's eyes, but despite the potential complications, tooth-in-eye surgery maintains a high success rate across the 10 countries in which it has been performed. A 2022 study from Italy, for example, determined around 94% of implant recipients could still see even 27 years after their surgeries. Although Chapman admitted to feeling a little apprehensive after first learning about the option, a quick chat with a woman who successfully received the same treatment convinced him to volunteer. Quote, "She had been completely blind for 20 years and is now snow skiing," unquote, he said, adding, quote, "I know it sounds a little crazy and science fictiony," unquote. This final article is from the Science Dinosaurs section and is entitled New 22-Foot-Long Titanosaur Discovered in Argentina, written by Laura Baesis, published March 5, 2025. The Titan of Salt stomped around 78 million years ago. This article begins with a photo. Its caption reads, An illustration of the Titanosaur Chatotitan calvoi and the other Cretaceous period organisms it lived with. A team of paleontologists found a new long-necked dinosaur species near a large salt flat in Argentina. Chatotitan calvoi, or Titan of the Salt, is estimated to have been about 22 feet long and lived about 78 million years ago. The new species of titanosaur is described in a study published March 5th in the journal Revista del Museo Argentino de Ciencias Naturales. From its well-preserved bones, the paleontologists believe that Chatotitan was a small and slender dinosaur with elongated vertebrae and delicate limbs that set it apart from other titanosaurs. It was an herbivore and belonged to the Rinconsaurian group. The bones were uncovered near a salt flat in the Anacleto Formation in northern Patagonia, Argentina, and found among fossils of ancient snails, garfishes, crocodile relatives, clams, freshwater turtles, and other organisms. Among this prehistoric treasure trove, the team uncovered the first fossil record of a family of tropical land snails, Neocyclotidae, and the first example of a small tropical air-breathing land snail in the genus Leptinaria. This area was once a small pond surrounded by sand dunes and palm trees in what was a more arid and dry environment. Quote, In addition to Chatotitan, the fossils we identified of mollusks, fish, and turtles enriches our understanding of this ancient ecosystem and expands our knowledge of life in Patagonia near the end of this dinosaur era, unquote. Diego Pohl, a study co-author, paleontologist, and National Geographic explorer, said in a statement, quote, Just by looking at the presence or absence of species in an area can suggest what makes the environment unique. In this case, the abundance of turtles and scarcity of crocodiles compared to regions in Europe and North America during the same period further highlights how Patagonian ecosystems were distinct as the continents drifted apart during the Cretaceous, unquote. Freshwater turtles made up over 90% of the recovered fossils, which surprised the research team who represented organizations in Argentina and Uruguay. During the Cretaceous period, this region was teeming with dinosaurs including Megaraptors and Gigantosaurus, but paleontologists did not expect to see this many turtles. Quote, This high percentage is highly unusual, as in coeval sites from North America and Europe, turtles rarely account for more than 50% of the fauna, unquote, study co-author and paleontologist Federico Agnolin said in a statement. Continued study of the area aims to broaden our scientific understanding of the dinosaurs and other vertebrates that lived in Patagonia during the last 15 million years of the Cretaceous. Pohl's work will also build an animal database to help other researchers identify the extinction patterns at the end of the Cretaceous in South America and how they related to other regions of the world. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's material from Popular Science Magazine. I'm Michael Piotrasch, and I'll be back soon with more interesting articles. Thank you for listening.